therapies, small molecules, new enzymes. I went on the board of a handful of companies focused by the summer of 2004. The last of six companies that I came onto the board of was Amicus. And it was a small company, a handful of employees, some early stage seed money, based in incubator space here in New Jersey. And they were looking at treating the disease differently. The whole idea was that most people living with these diseases aren't missing an enzyme. They make it, but because of the mutation, they can't make it right. It doesn't fold properly. So if you understand protein folding well, what Amicus was trying to do was to take small molecules that would be developed to selectively target to, bind to, and stabilize a person's own enzyme. They had animal results in February that looked promising. They asked if I'd consider being CEO. I said no, I wasn't ready. I was committed to what I was doing with the guys at Domain. I wanted to stay on other boards, but I'd come on the board and I'd consult. So I did that in the back half of 2004. By the end of 2004, the animal data was looking even better. And by that point, I decided that I needed to kind of bet on one horse. They asked again if I'd consider CEO, and I agreed to it. In January of 2005, I became CEO of what was then about a six-person company, Amicus, and with one drug in preclinical studies for Fabry.
Mm-hmm. And where did the technology come from?
Came out of Mount Sinai School of Medicine, mm-hmm. From Dr. Bob Desnick and Dr. Jim Phan, who were working on it there.
And did they come to Domain? Is that how?
No, actually, Domain, it wasn't a Domain company. So separate from what I, the work I was doing at Domain, there I had funded, helped to start a company called Orexigen Therapeutics. It works in the obesity space, very different than rare diseases, but a company with good promise. Most of the other work I was doing was in the rare diseases, separate from my relationship with Domain. I stepped aside from Orexigen. I stepped aside from all the other boards I was on to become chairman and CEO of Amicus, with the notion that we would build this into a very significant company, the next Genzyme in the field. We would do it with our core technology of pharmacological chaperones in the lysosomal storage disorders, beginning in Fabry disease. And fast forward now 7.5 years, that Fabry program is now a late stage phase 3 program. We're also now using the technology not just as a monotherapy for people with Fabry disease, but in Fabry and now Pompe and in other diseases, using it as a combination, because one of the things we've learned is in the limitations of these enzyme replacement therapies, you know, what you're doing with the ERTs is actually pretty unnatural. You're taking a bioreactor-made enzyme and you're giving it every other week or so, maybe once a week, every other week, mm-hmm. infusing it into the blood where these enzymes usually don't live. You're putting it into a very high pH environment in the blood where these enzymes become very unstable in blood, much less potent, much less active, and much more immunogenic, which we think is contributing to why they don't always work so well. Mm-hmm. It's a problem. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, it just brings to mind, I mean, these must be issues that Genzyme has been considering all along, right? What's the approach there?
Yeah, we've known of these problems for a long time. We've looked absolutely at Genzyme. We looked at different diluents, different stabilizing agents, you know, pegylation, all of that. Nothing worked very well. Mm-hmm. Pegylating it, for instance, interfered with the activity in folding and targeting. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we've known these problems. We just haven't had a tool set to address it. It seems that nothing works better than these small molecule chaperones that bind to the active site of a protein. So as a monotherapy, they bind to a person's own natural enzyme mm-hmm. to enhance its activity and transport it to the lysosome. Mm-hmm. When used in direct combination with the enzyme replacement therapies, they stabilize the ERT product. They can stabilize it in the infusion bag. They can stabilize it in the blood. And by doing that, we've seen it now with clinical data in Fabry. It increases by several fold. In Fabry, we've seen 200 to 400% increases in plasma activity of Fabrazyme. And on biopsy, we've also seen much greater tissue uptake of the enzyme. We're doing a study now in Pompe. We don't yet have the data. But what we know in animals in Pompe, like we saw in Fabry, is with the addition of the chaperone on board, when the infusion of the enzyme product is given, you can make these products more stable, more potent, much more promote the uptake much better into key tissues of disease, like muscle and Pompe. And we believe you can make them much less immunogenic. And by muting the immune response, you can allow more of the enzyme in a more active form to get to tissue. So at the end of the day, we think we might have a tool set that could provide for a much better therapeutic outcome with these ERTs, beginning with an oral co-administration of our chaperone, all the way to we're working on development of next-generation enzyme replacement therapies where a chaperone can be directly co-formulated into this next-generation ERT for Fabry, Pompe, any number of these diseases. And that's what we think that, you know, the future may be for the treatment of these diseases, which makes sense. You know, the enzyme replacement therapy technology is a great first-generation approach. The technology is over 20 years old. There's got to be advances, important advances, and we think this might be one of them. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do here. And we've got about 130 employees, 120 here, and a small number in a research lab in San Diego, largely an R&D company. Our key partner is GlaxoSmithKline, GSK now, in the rare diseases, which is an incredible advancement. If you told me 5-10 years ago, one of the biggest players in the lysosomal storage diseases would be GSK and Pfizer, in addition to Shire, BioMarin, Genzyme. I don't know that I would have believed it, but GSK has been a great partner for us. They own 15% of Amicus. They partner with us on our Fabry program, and it's been a great relationship.
Mm-hmm. And in growing this company, what are the current issues that you're dealing with? Sarah was telling me that...
How long do you have?
Well, it sounds like you've had some pretty remarkable success.
Given
the current environment.
We've been very fortunate. We've been well capitalized. This is a very new technology. It's an entirely different pharmacology. And anytime you've got a new technology, it takes time. For us, the biggest challenge as a monotherapy has been figuring out dosing and dose regimen. Mm-hmm. That's taken years of phase 2 studies in Fabry to get it right. We hope we've got it right now in Fabry. You know, for us, you know, the challenge is going to be advancing the science as quickly as we can, getting it into other disease areas, but making sure we do it right, we do it safely, and we have a profound impact. One thing we're not looking to do at Amicus is have small improvements and changes in disease outcomes. We want to look for where are the areas where we can have the greatest impact, the big changes. And that, for me, is where the lessons of the history of biotech are so important. You tell the story of what Henry Tremere did at Genzyme and the founders and the scientists there and getting into Gaucher and pushing that into a 10 or 12 patient pivotal study in enzyme derived from placental tissue. That's remarkable. Mm-hmm. If you tried to sell that to people today as a new idea, they think you're crazy. And that was only 20, 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's risk-taking. That's innovation. That's taking huge risks to fundamentally impact people's lives. It doesn't always work. It's taking smart risks, but when you do it, you know, it makes this the greatest industry in the world. Mm-hmm. And when it works, it makes this the best job you can have in running these companies.
And how do you convey that to, you've got 100 and some people out here, and to convey that, what we're doing is pretty risky, people.
Well, it's smart risk. So how do we mitigate? You know, we always say in our mission statement, we developed that mission statement 6 years ago when it was 20 of us in the company. And, you know, I'd encourage you to read it. It's on every one of our walls, and it starts with the words, "We believe." And those are the only words I gave them. And then the employees in the company put the rest of it together. And it talks about everything in our culture and our commitment. But it starts with, the very first word is saying, "We believe that we must constantly build momentum in the fight against human genetic diseases, and we seek to deliver the highest quality therapies for people afflicted with these diseases." But it talks about embracing constant innovation and being passionate, a duty to obsolete our own technologies. We get our first drug approved, we're not going to declare victory and go home. We're going to work on the next best way to treat. We already are on the next best way to treat the disease. Asking the tough questions, not going to be constrained by prior thinking, not because this is the way it's been done before. So, you know, we want to build something different. And give you an example of how we're doing it today. We've got a family in from Florida who have a young girl diagnosed with a lysosomal storage disease that's not one, it's not Fabry, it's not Pompe, it's not Gaucher, it's another LSD. we've disclosed to the rest of the world in the last few months, we are now working with this combination chaperone plus ERT technology and the development of next generation ERTs and other lysosomal storage diseases. This is one of those diseases, and it's going to be the first time we've had a family come in and talk about their experience living with this other disease that our company hasn't been exposed to except for our scientists. And we will have our lawyers there, our accountants there, everybody in the company, our administrative assistants, everybody, and they're going to hear a family perspective of living with this particular rare disease. And that's part of what we've done that dozens of times in Fabry, Gaucher, and Pompe. And now we're doing it with the other diseases that we've just started researching a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. So it makes it a very personal journey for everybody in the company.
I'm sorry, did you mention the others?
We haven't disclosed what they are.
Oh, okay.
We have said that they are...
They're rare genetic
They're
disorders.
Rare genetic diseases in the lysosomal storage disorders. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And as we have more data, we'll be discussing what they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right.
So that's kind of who we are. I'm happy to continue and answer any other questions.
Well, what else should we know about your career? We're going to put together a story for a magazine.
Sure.
What would you like us to say? What do you want people to know about you, about the company, about your career?
We talked about the objectivity early on. I worked really hard early in my career to either have my company executive hat on or to have my dad hat on. And I used to think that they would be in conflict. And I don't think that anymore. And I don't try to wear two separate hats. I'm a dad of two kids with profound special needs, but profound special gifts too. And to not share that with people, whether it's through these articles, through the movie, through our culture here in the company, that would, not be telling the full story of who I am and what our family is all about. And it means that this becomes a more personal journey for everybody in the company. But that's okay. It's not pulling on the heartstrings. It just is what it is. And, I think oftentimes we try to compartmentalize different pieces of our life. And for me, I just don't know how to do that very well. This, living now for more than 12 years with our kids with this genetic disorder has certainly shaped who we are as a family. Times for the best. Sometimes there's been emotional challenges, and we try to balance that. I think one clear. Go ahead, Mark. Yeah.
It occurs to me. I'm sure that in this business, developing therapies for these diseases, you have families coming to you, and they
all
want
the time,
to talk to you
every week.
I mean, is that a challenge to you to compartmentalize, and where you have to put on the objective executive hat, or and then you have to say
I don't have to be conscious about it though. So for instance, this morning before you and I met, we just spent 2 hours with that family, the mom and dad from Florida, and they had their doctor from Florida on the phone, and we took them through very detailed science data. They're being very, very vocal advocates in their disease community, and I remember when I was in their shoes 12 years ago, not a lot of people wanted to talk to me about what they were doing. It was almost like a secretive hush-hush in companies, and it shouldn't be. I mean, obviously, there's proprietary data that you can't share, but we basically told them everything we know about what we've been doing in these diseases, and in their disease, how we're thinking of tackling a next-generation approach. And it's pretty eye-opening on both sides of the table. I learn about their family, their disease, patient needs, family needs, and they learn about what we're doing, and we figure out other ways that we can complement each other's work from a patient advocacy and foundation standpoint to the work that we do. So I don't know that you need to not be the dad. If I'm in there talking about corporate strategy, financing plans, drug development, manufacturing, doesn't mean that I'm not a dad and I have to pretend not to be. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes I'll mix in my personal experience in Pompe. They asked me on one of the Pompe slides, well, how is it, that's great, it's affected these people in this way, how has it affected your Megan and Patrick? And I'll tell them, this is what we've seen personally. Mm-hmm. I don't think you need to separate it. Mm-hmm. You just need to be aware of when it's appropriate or not, and most importantly, when it's relevant or not.
Mm-hmm. here, you've been very well financed.
Yes.
Been able to do, you have the resources to do what, looking ahead, you said we need to do this, you have resources to be able to do that. That's great. Right now, it's difficult for a lot of companies.
Extremely difficult.
Right. As father of kids with rare genetic disorder, you started a foundation, raised money. Do you see a role for venture philanthropy?
Yeah, I think it's very important. Look what the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation did in getting really what is the first major disease-modifying treatment approved, even for a small subset of people living with cystic fibrosis. What Vertex did in partnership with the CF Foundation is it's a tremendous model. Not every foundation is a Cystic Fibrosis Foundation where they can bring that level of resources to it, but it's a good model. I've met with lots of families and foundations and encouraged them to partner with industry. I used to work for, and still have a good relationship with the Muscular Dystrophy Association, and in the last few years have been working with the MDA to give research grants not just to academic researchers, but to industry. We just got a $200,000 grant from MDA to study the immunogenicity of enzyme replacement therapy in Pompe disease. It's going to help us a lot. They've given multi-million dollar grants to companies in Duchenne muscular dystrophy. I think it's a great partnership. Mm-hmm. Academic research plays such an important role in discovery, early stage ideas and research, but drug development is done within companies. Mm-hmm. And that's important to realize too. And a lot of these companies need help financially. They need help with clinical, tools, clinical sites, experience, and those are things that not-for-profits can bring to the table. What you worry about is, we live in a very risk-averse environment in the last 4 years, since the financial crisis in particular. And biotech is, by its nature, a risky business. You can de-risk it a little bit, but it's always going to involve significant innovation and risk. It should. And because of that, so many early-stage companies have struggled with financing. I don't know today if I can get the Amicus plan from 7 years ago financed, if it was at that point. I think it'd be very challenging, and that would be a shame. Mm-hmm. We need a lot more Amicus-type companies to be funded so that companies like ours can grow up to be the next BioMarins, the next Genzymes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been on both sides of the fence. You were at Domain.
Yeah.
Evaluating, making decisions about, we can't go there. I mean, that's another sort of, maybe, can you go back to that? Can I don't know how long, looking ahead, how long you're going to be with this company, see it through, right?
Yeah, I intend to be here at Amicus a very long time. I, would love to, either through Amicus or some other way, much later in my career, to think about how can I help, either mentor other CEOs, help drive ideas and capital, basically bring people, innovation, and capital together. That's what the best venture capitalists do. That's what the Brooke Briers of the world, did early on and have fostered for a generation now.
Yeah, it seems like the model is under some duress here.
It's under a lot of stress, but, I don't know if it's a structural change or a cyclical change, but the very best people in this business, the Brooke Byers, the Jim Blairs, the Brian Doveys at Domain, other names, those are the people who, they're still taking the risks. Jim Blair once told me when we were debating an investment idea for an early stage company a couple of years ago at Domain, and I was really hesitant in recommending against it, and I remember Jim standing in my office listening and said, yeah, those are all great points, but we're going to invest, and we're going to put, I think he was going to put like $20 million into the company. He said, because at the end of the day, I'm not in the risk mitigation business. I'm in the risk-taking business so I can create value and build businesses. And I think all the VCs out there need to keep that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Domain is also doing well these days.
Yeah, they're among the very best in the business.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, John?
No, I think,
I think we've got plenty to work with.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't want to give you too big of an article, but, you've got The Cure and you've seen the film.
I could rely on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's Gita's. I mean, what she wrote is accurate. You know, she interviewed over 200 people. It was our history a long time ago. A lot's changed. You know, that basically captures events in our lives from 1998 to 2003. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's more than a decade old. A lot's happened since. You know, one thing we did do when the film came out, Eileen and I, my wife and I, had a chance to reflect on not just the, you know, Gita wrote very well, very accurately what happened. Eileen and I tried to capture, we wrote a book called Chasing Miracles, our family's journey of strength, hope, and joy. It was really our personal memoir of...
Is that available?
Gosh, I was just looking for it. I don't know that I have a copy here. But I can send you a copy.
All right.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and it was really our family's perspective of what it's all meant and what we've learned. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do talk in one chapter about innovation and hope and biotechnology in there, but also very personal stories of what we've learned.
Okay, yeah, that would be great to have that. I mean, this is the kind of story that we want to tell.
Yeah, even with that, we were... Even picking the title for it, you know, Chasing Miracles, we realized it's the title has a very special double meaning for us. It's, yes, on one hand, chasing the miracles of newer and better treatments for Pompe and other diseases now. But it was also, I guess it took me years to realize this, that Megan and Patrick are our little miracles. You know, and we've learned more from about love and life and living from them than we've ever taught them. And we've realized, you know, life really is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And, you know, for us, that's been one of the beautiful parts of this journey.
Yeah. So, a pretty inspiring story.
Well, I mean, you know, that's what it is.
I haven't read all the book yet, but, I was watching the movie and I was